break. It's a mini episode.
Hello and welcome to another mini-soda. You've got to check this out with Mike and Dre. I'm the Mike, and our guest Najma Salam talks about how she developed the game The Ouroboros Express, available now for free on Steam. Then, Dre and I talk about some of our own game development experiences. We finish with discussions on Babylon 5 ship design and why secondary villains are the best villains. I'll see you at the other end.
Okay, I have to, there's five questions I have on this. I'll get to,
sure.
So we can get to Babylon 5. How did you even get involved in making a game like that? Because I was looking through, you know, some of your website, some of your YouTube clips. I noticed how you seem to be very much on top of every aspect of the game and not just contributing art to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So last year, I directed a game, which is a visual novel with a team of 30 people. At one point, it was 40 people, believe
What's the name of the game?
The Ouroboros Express. Yeah, so it's a kind of romance mystery visual novel. It's up on Steam and it's free, which is the best kind of price to play a game at, in my opinion. So you can play it right now. And yeah, so it originally started as a game jam, a 30-day game jam. And then we just thought, actually, there's some juice here. We can squeeze this a little more.
How did that game jam? Was just this something you signed up for? Or was it something through another email geeks or job you had?
Oh, hell yeah. You know, if you feel like you want to just try your hand at making a game, join a game jam. It's like the easiest thing to weigh into just trying to make a game. So I had some friends that I'd done a game writing masterclass. So I finished one. So I had all these friends that I'd done this game writing masterclass with. It was led by Susan O'Connor, who's one of the writers on Bioshock. So, and she written for Gears of War as well. She's amazing. I'd also taken a game design class with Will Shen, who is one of the design directors for Fallout 4 and Fallout 3 and Skyrim. He famously designed the intro to Skyrim, the one everyone quotes. So me and some friends, we were like, hey, like, why don't we just try out doing a game jam, the visual novel? So a couple of game jams later, we did what was the beginning of the Ouroboros Express. And then
sounds like almost a hackathon for developers, because developers do that all the
exactly
time.
That's exactly it. Yeah, for sure. So, but we were like, we totally bit off more than we could chew, because a lot of people would just do like a prototype or something. We just made an entire game in 30 days, and we didn't know, like, you didn't have to do that. So we looked at it and I was like, I'd love to just add voice acting and add more art to this. So we did another 6 months. No, it was 5 months of production. And yeah, and we uploaded it on Steam, and it's been a really cool experience because like other people have been able to play it, and I got to talk about it at the games industry conference this year. It was amazing. I did it with a global team as well, totally remote. People just giving up their time to just work on this game, just pure passion. But now I'm on a different project as a game producer for PandaCat Games, and they're working on a game called Spirits of Heartwood.
Nice. And I'm not seeing that on your website just yet. So Spirits of Heartwood is what people should look out for.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. PandaCat Games. Look out for them. So yeah, it's been a really exciting journey.
So Mike, in Dre fashion, I get to take us on a related tangent, my favorite kind.
Okay, I got one too, so I'll let you go first.
I go, oh, thank you. Yeah, next time we'll do rock, paper, scissors if we have to do something for it. But in terms of game dev, actually, just a thing I do, this is semi-produced, but it's more for fun. My friend Landon and me Twitch games with each other. Really, we're not looking for an audience. It's an excuse for two people far away from each other to play games with each other. Yeah. A friend of ours, Cliff Robinson, Cliff Ford Robinson, I'm going to say it that way because his logo includes a Cliff, a Ford, a Robin, and a son, so he's genius, made a game called Entropy Billiards. And same point, the way to get it, he handed me the source code to a developer. Right. And so, of course, I played it and we enjoyed it. And then I was like, I'm going to mess with this. And so, again, that's some of the most fun stuff is, as you're saying with game dev. It's even if you don't 100% remember what you're doing. I mean, I've done graphics and stuff. That's forever ago. Yeah. If you can get the source code and you're semi-literate, it's so much fun to mess around. And sometimes those minor tweaks are what makes games amazing. One of my favorite apocryphal stories. I think it's true, but Space Invaders, one of the most famous arcade games of all time. That was a mistake. It goes faster and faster.
Yes.
That wasn't intentional. Yeah. That was because computers back then couldn't compute. And as you got fewer artifacts on the screen, it went faster and faster. And that's that has become like a running game, like thing that is used from now on, like the speed up as time runs out. So yes, even if you don't know what you're doing, messing around with games is so much fun.
Oh yeah. So
all right, throw the ball to you, Mike.
So yeah, my thing, I don't know if you remember, did you ever have a TI-85 calculator? When those graphing calculators.
86, man.
You had 86.
What a flex.
I was the first person as a junior in high school to make a 3D game out of one of those. I figured out how to program.
Oh my gosh.
Because I had an Intellivision growing up. That was my system. And there was a bunch of these D&D games on it where it's, I don't know if you've ever played those first person games. Right now, if you UFO 50 is out and one of the games is just like that, but you go through and like you turn and you only see a big like a black screen ahead of you, and there's a way for to show if there's something on the side, and I looked at all the way the Intellivision. I put those into and made a random dungeon generator of just a 4x4 thing, and
it could make a move.
And I turned into like a game show called Find the Bunny. And the best thing of those is like you could have your link thing, so you could hook up to somebody else with that and give them your code.
You made a multi-link TI-85 game, Mike. Yeah, that is
so
you are getting
sick.
Some geek cred from this audience.
I told you I was a coder. I don't usually talk about that as much as music, though.
That is really sick. I love when people make games out of unexpected things, right? It's so, because like we all grow up playing. That's what we're doing at the end of the day. And so there's, you know, even if you're not a coder, there's all sorts of things out there that you can use to make games, like Twine. You can make text-based games with branching, you know, narratives with different endings. That's really cool. So you could do, you know, I've seen people do really cool stuff in it, you know, exploring a whole dungeon just with text. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's all sorts of ways that we can play. And yeah, it's really cool to hear that story, making a multi-linked calculator.
Yeah, this feels like one of those cheese ads, you know, where they just like the milk industry got together and are like, we don't even need to plug a specific, just like cheese as a concept. So same thing, like game development brought to you by the You Gotta Check This Out podcast.
Yeah,
with guest host Naj. All right, so our commercial out of the way, paid for by the Gaming Council of America.
Yeah,
so let's get on to the
one
show
other okay. Main topic for Naj before we get on, and it has to be music, because I was looking at your site and I was so bummed out when I saw there's a big thing about you doing ukulele covers. Then I was looking at your professional sites, and even the link on your site, it wasn't going anywhere. I saw thought, oh, she took them all down. And then you sent me on the side your other channel where you do all the ukulele covers.
Yes.
And I wondered, why did you start doing that? Why YouTube for getting music out there?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so the story is I picked up it's so funny, and this is such like an early 20s thing, but one
like
day
15 years ago with some of these things.
So I saw someone like bring this ukulele to like class. I was going to Polytechnic at the time, and I was like, I could try that. That looks easy. So I picked up like a cheap ukulele. I must have borrowed one from a friend, and I just kind of started learning chords, and like I could sing as well. And I was just having fun. And then that was right before I flew to Melbourne to do my university. Mm-hmm. And as a gift, my dad bought me a really lovely ukulele, which I have to this day, Pendragon, the ukulele.
Nice.
I was really like going to university. I was like going hard at university. I wasn't partying. I wasn't like going out all the time. I was like fully, I'm here to study. But then like when I was on break, I was like, well, I haven't really got anything to do, so I'm going to just play some ukulele and sing and, you know, make these videos, and I don't care if nobody sees them or whatever. And that's kind of what that came from, just making ukulele covers for fun and people just liking them. And actually a funny story is that is how I met my husband. So mm-hmm. I was making ukulele covers, and on the other side of the world in Brighton in the UK, my future husband was learning how to play ukulele, and he was looking up YouTube videos and tutorials, and he found me, and we became pen pals, basically online pen pals for 8 months, and then we met, and then we've been together ever since. And that was 15 years ago.
Awesome. Well, I was gonna say, if you ever want to do a collaboration, I'm just starting to do more music videos and play bass a lot more, but I got my mandolin. I play mandolin, guitar. I just had a band practice right before this I came from.
That's incredible.
And by the way, I am keeping track of it. It's Najmi Tender is the channel, so A+ on that. I'm sad I'm gonna have to wait, because there are some songs that I like there. And I will say this. One of my favorite songs is Take on Me. I have heard Mad Bread do a cover. I will say this, there is a high bar, because Annie B. Sweet, I think that's how you pronounce it, does a ukulele cover
of
Take on
Mad
Me
Bread,
which is amazing.
I gotta stop you, Dre. That was my new band, Rock Lab. So if you go to Facebook right now, it's all over my Mike Slater account because we're trying to get some traction. But yeah, I get to play fretless bass in that one.
Wow.
To either editor of us, Mike, I'm fairly certain there was a Mad Red version too, but I will check it up and make sure. It could have been either. Because
we'll get to bring this up in a future episode.
Yeah, this is the worst thing to do to date a podcast that's being released in the future is the worst thing. But yeah, Mike, during a time in 2025, I think had a gig like every day for a month. So it's been absurd,
goodness,
with multiple bands, et cetera. So,
yeah.
Wow. All right.
Okay. So
I think that's it.
That's our
proper nerddom. And that's not even entering the Babylon 5 talk. So.
Exactly. Nash, I spent so much time looking at your stuff. I was freaked out when I saw how many things you do. Cause I'm like, we are going to re-recording for 2 hours and then editing it. the commentary goes to a lot about both the design of every race's ship, how they work, and also like they figured out all those tactical the parts of the battle. What would someone actually have to do to fire down and take out like anti-missile systems? And how do the actual smaller fighters, what points do they attack at the different ships to? Mm-hmm. How do they run away? All of this they really put into the show for these big battle scenes, which only get 2 or 3 per season.
Oh, but it's totally part of the storytelling, you know, because I think like you can even tell what each race's ship, just by looking at the design, what is it that they prioritize, you know, what kind of political leanings they have, right? It's not so different from when you look at the Romulans and the Klingons ships from Star Trek, what kind of, you know, what their specialties are, right? And what they value above all else.
Yeah, they're so distinct in a way that tells you about the race, too.
Exactly.
It's not only you can like, oh, that's a Vorlon ship or that's a Shadow ship. It's like, that's a Vorlon ship because it was modeled after mollusks and that's how they started design. And Shadows were designed after like lobsters and crabs and eyelashes.
They look spiky. They look like, you know, they look angry. Yes. There's somebody who makes these incredible like writing analyses on YouTube. I think it might be the Closer Look, might be somebody else, but they wrote about villainy. And they wrote about like, why do we tend to hate the henchmen, the second in command, like certain characters more than we hate the big bad themselves. And it's so true, right? If you think about something like The Mummy, I don't know if you guys have watched The Mummy. It's unironically my favorite film. But Imhotep is like the big bad. I don't really hate Imhotep. I do hate Benny, who is like the kind of like skeevy little guy, right? And it feels like Londo isn't a big bad. He's kind of like the skeevy little guy here. And it's because the concept is that the big bad is outside of society. And usually the little guy is somebody working within society. And that's why we hate them, because they mirror like the negative aspects of ourselves. Whereas like a big bad is like kind of beyond comprehension almost a lot of the time.
Yeah,
right?
It's like having an actual target instead of a nebulous idea as the bad thing. It's let's get him. That if we take care of that person, then the problem's solved.
Exactly. And, you know, and this person is relatable to me. They're like, we're on the same level. And it's frustrating that we're not working together for a common goal. And I think it feels like Londo feels like that kind of person. Like, it's so frustrating that we're not working together towards a common goal. We're working. He's actively trying to harm us. So, yeah, that's kind of the point I wanted to make about his character. I'm interested to see where his character goes after this.
There's a weird comparable I didn't think I'd make, but Lewis Litt on Suits.
Yes.
Like some interviews with the actor who played him, and the actor who played him was like, you know, people will get upset, and he's like, that's the character. And the thing about Lewis Litt, if you've never watched, is like, he is a character that is really intelligent, has in some ways a big heart, and then just always gets in his own way. And Londo is very much the same way.
Yeah.
And it's the same frustration where, and it's even more overt than say on Suits with Babylon 5, where we have that Veer character.
Mm-hmm.
Veer is routinely going, you don't need to do this. This is he's Jiminy Cricket.
Right.
And Londo, there is one episode this season where literally Veer's, okay, you saw that was a bad thing that you did. We can change it now, right? You recognize that, like, you accept you have a problem, we'll change it. He's, no, I'm already on this path. We're going to see it through to 10. You're like,
oh, gosh.
You know? And yeah, you're just like, why?
Why?
And then we get here, and there are more of those. Spoiler, next season.
Interesting. Yeah, it's a real sunken cost thing, right? You know, he feels like, well, I'm, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound kind of thing, you know?
And that's where we ran all out of tangents. At least the ones decent enough to air. Join us next week for a full episode where we cover Babylon 5 Season 3, Episode 6, Dust to Dust with Alice Michie Lee. Cheers, all.